Jefferson County Public Health Officer Dr. Allison Berry and Department of Emergency Management Director Willie Bentz will now brief our commissioners and you, our KPTZ listeners.
So, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. I will do my very best. So case-wise, when we're looking at COVID-19 around the country, we are continuing to see cases rise, not unsurprisingly. So cases are up about 30% nationwide. That continues to be led by the Midwest and the Northeast. Highest case rates currently are actually in Michigan. So when you're planning your Thanksgiving travels, that's just something to be aware of. On the West Coast, we're still seeing that cases are largely plateauing, and in Washington state, they're actually still continuing to downtrend somewhat. So case rates in Washington state were at 321 per 100,000. So certainly higher than we are in Jefferson County, but moving in the right direction, at least so far. We do anticipate a bump after Thanksgiving, but we're glad to see that we are going into Thanksgiving in a somewhat better place than we were before. In Jefferson County, we are currently up to 1,273 cases of COVID-19. That puts our case rate for the last week at 193. Per 100,000, so somewhat down from where we were before. It's our first time in the hundreds in a while. And so still high, but moving in the right direction. We have three of our citizens currently hospitalized for a total of 78 hospitalizations. Unfortunately, we have had one new death. So we are up to 18 deaths due to COVID-19. This person was in his 70s. He did have some underlying conditions, and he had received two doses of the vaccine. He had not yet received his booster dose. We want to send our condolences to his family. And I think unfortunately, this does serve as a reminder for us that, especially if you're over 70, it's really important to get your booster. We are seeing fading efficacy of the vaccine in that age group in particular. And so as we move into the holidays and start gathering more indoors, we really want to make sure that our citizens, especially our elder citizens, get their boosters. And we'll dig into more boosters going forward. In Clallam County, we have 5,207 cases. Case rate there is 232 per 100,000. In Kitsap, the case rate is 220 per 100,000. We do have two active long-term care facility outbreaks in Clallam and Jefferson County. One in Jefferson County is up to 13 cases, one staffer and 12 residents. The other one in Clallam is up to 42. Both of those outbreaks have actually traced to unvaccinated staff members. So we are working with our partners around the state to look at ways that we can reduce that risk for those staff members that did get exemptions from getting vaccinated, likely revolving around increased testing, rules around moving between facilities. We've seen that a particular risk is actually having traveling staff, which we understand the long-term care facilities have to use because there's such a shortage of workers, but that does really increase the risk of moving COVID between facilities around the state. So boosters, that's I think the biggest news. Boosters have been approved for anyone who completed their series and who is more than 6 months out from their original doses. I do think there are some folks who need boosters more than others. So folks over 70 strongly recommend getting a booster. We are seeing waning efficacy in that group. For folks with significant underlying health conditions, we also recommend boosters in that group. If you have other illnesses that your body is constantly fighting, it's hard for your body to fight additional infections. So if you have chronic underlying illnesses, I strongly recommend that you get a booster as well. If you are otherwise healthy and younger, you are eligible for a booster, and a booster is a good idea. So the boosters are quite safe. They reduce your risk of catching and transmitting the infection. But we do see the biggest bang for our buck in our older population who really, really needs the boosters. We are seeing that getting a booster in these younger populations does further reduce your risk of contracting COVID-19 and then passing it on to others. So it is a good idea. We are not planning right now on scaling back up the mass vaccinations for the booster doses for younger folks right now. Primarily, we're trying to focus on making sure we get those kids vaccinated, really acknowledge the incredible work of our volunteer workforce who have been really working around the clock since the very beginning of this. And And we can't, there's a limit to how much we can push them for. But the other thing that we are hopeful about is there is a there's increased availability of the vaccine in the community. So I really want to encourage our residents to look on Vaccine Locator, and we'll make sure that we have a link to that from our website. Our pharmacies are starting to step up to do more vaccinating. And also many of our healthcare providers around the region are starting to step up to do more vaccinating. And really encourage folks to access boosters in that way. So with that, I'm happy to take any questions.
Heidi, Greg, any questions for Dr. Berry?
I guess I'll ask you a very personal question. I'm relatively healthy. I'm, you know, not quite 50. So I guess my inclination is just to kind of wait and let the resources support those that have underlying conditions or are senior. To get them first, to make sure that I'm not standing in the way of someone that could really benefit from it. And I'm also, you know, very conscious of the global issues with the boosters and equity of access. And I know that I can't personally really move that needle, but I guess I'm wondering if you could address those two issues and tell me, hey, should I get one right now? Should I wait a month?
Yeah, I think as long as there is a shortage of availability, I think it is the right thing to do to prioritize those spaces to people who need them the most. So our elder population, folks with underlying conditions, and we are seeing access is a little bit tight right now. And so if you are young and healthy, and there is, and there aren't an abundance of slots, I think it is reasonable to practice all those other safety mechanisms if you got fully vaccinated and wait on getting that booster. Still wear a mask, be thoughtful about your gatherings. But if you're doing all those things and you have a good functioning immune system, your vaccine is still working really well, and your risk of catching and transmitting the infection is still much lower than folks who are unvaccinated. So I think that's very reasonable to wait. We do think pretty soon there's going to be much more access to vaccine after we work through making sure our kids get vaccinated, getting some more of our elders vaccinated. And so pretty soon you should see a lot more availability. And so I think pretty soon it would be a good idea to get a booster. But I am aware, and I think it is a challenge, the global vaccine equity piece. I think, you know, from a national standpoint, it would be better for us to choose to vaccinate our elders, our high-risk folks, get them all boosted up, and then send the rest of the vaccines to the rest of the world. That does not appear to be the decision we've made nationally. And so I think you can do both. I think you, while the vaccine is here, it's going to go to waste if we don't use it. And so we want to make sure that we, you know, get it into arms and don't throw it away. But I also encourage everyone to reach out to your senators, reach out to your federal elected officials, and encourage them to move towards vaccine equity, because it's not only the right thing to do, but it's also going to make us all safer. Leaving most of the world unvaccinated is not good public health practice. So you can do both. But I would right now really encourage our elders, get those boosters. Those are really important. If you have underlying conditions, get those boosters. If you are unvaccinated, please get vaccinated. That is the most important thing that will protect your community. Otherwise, if you're young, healthy, got both your shots, and there's not a lot of availability, it's okay to wait a little bit, but just do all those other safe things, wear your mask, be thoughtful about your gatherings, make sure they're fully vaccinated gatherings, and you should do just fine.
Great. Thank you. And one other question, if I may, and that's, in public comment, I talked about a few cherished friends who were unvaccinated who visited this weekend. And one, I guess I'd love an update on the antiviral pills from you, and specifically one of the spirited conversations that I had with one of my friends. We talked about the Merck antiviral pill specifically, and they asserted that it was essentially ivermectin without the apple flavor. And I was wondering if you could
do that. I would say no. So there are a couple antiviral medications that are quite promising that we're looking to likely see get into our community by early in December. That was the most recent update we saw from the state. There, of course, will be less availability of medication than there is demand. And so it will have to be prioritized to our highest risk folks. But the data is really quite strong for those. So you see a between 60 and 75% reduction in hospitalization and death, depending on which pill you're talking about, particularly in high risk groups. So all of these trials were in high risk people, people over 65, people with underlying conditions. So people who were already at a high risk of hospitalization and death. We don't have the data on their efficacy in otherwise healthy young people. That's not something that's been studied yet. So you can anticipate that when they do come out, they're going to be targeted towards the groups that they've been studied in and who they will have the most beneficial effect in. So the data looks quite good. I think that is important to contrast, since you mentioned it, to the data around ivermectin, which has shown no efficacy in preventing or treating COVID-19. There was a very promising early paper looking at the possibility of using ivermectin to treat COVID-19. When that paper was peer reviewed, they found that they had falsified the data. And so that paper has since been retracted, which unfortunately has not stopped it from being circulated as fact. And so that's really the primary driver behind why people are using ivermectin. I think, especially in the early days of the pandemic, it was the right thing to do to test everything and see if we could find anything that would fight this virus. And that has been going on. One of the things that I still hear sometimes is, why aren't we looking at treatments for COVID-19? And we are. It's just that nothing else has succeeded until these most recent pills and monoclonal antibodies. But they are promising. They're very likely to be really important for reducing mortality for these high-risk folks who do get infected, but they are not a replacement for vaccination. So vaccination reduces your risk of contracting COVID-19. It reduces your risk of hospitalization and death by over 95%, which is much stronger than these pills. And they are not mutually exclusive. We just need to use all the tools in our toolbox. Vaccine reduces your risk of getting COVID, spreading it to others. If you do unfortunately get sick and you're in a high-risk group, I think these medications will be a very important tool in reducing your risk of dying from that infection. But it's not one or the other.
Thank you. And then, and finally, do you think these pills will be used in a healthcare scenario? So it would be, you know, if you are you're recently diagnosed, you're having some serious issues, and you know, you're at the hospital, and that's where they would apply these medicines. It's not like you'd get a prescription and go home. Or
it would actually be primarily in the outpatient setting. So these medications are most effective if given within 5 days of your symptom onset. Generally, severe symptoms of COVID-19 don't tend to start until about 7 to 10 days into your infection. And so these are before you are severely ill and given primarily by your risk factor. The key there is they are even more effective if you get them within 3 days of your symptom onset, which is all the more reason of, if you're sick, get tested right away. Because once we have these medications, it's going to be really important that we get them to you if you're in one of those high-risk groups. And we're doing a lot of work at the public health and healthcare system to make sure that referral process is quick and smooth. So that when you're sick, you get tested right away. When we get that result, you get a call right away, you get a prescription right away. Because all that time really matters as far as efficacy for these drugs.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Heidi, do you have anything?
I just have a quick Turkey Confidential part two question.
I love it. Let's do it.
Happy Thanksgiving week, everybody. And I historically have hosted about 30 people in my tiny dining room for the last 15 years. And this year, I think we're going to be about half that, which is still a big group. And we are going to do a rapid testing cocktail hour in the greenhouse and on the front porch by a fire. And the questions come up. We were approaching the strategy of having one rapid test per house.
Oh, sure. Okay.
And I just wanted to know, I mean, is there any reason to be concerned about that?
I think that's a pretty good test conservation strategy. Certainly the testing resources are not infinite. And so I think testing a household member in each household makes a lot of sense. Certainly anyone with symptoms should be tested and preferably not come to the gathering if they're feeling sick. But also then if you're picking in a household, you'd want to pick the member of that household that's your highest risk of transmitting infection. So if you have any unvaccinated members of that household, they should get tested before they come to the gathering, especially if you have higher risk older relatives. If they're all vaccinated, then you want to look for the one who's most likely to bring infection in. So if you've got a healthcare worker, a bus driver, someone who gets a lot of exposure in their day, someone who goes to daycare or school, those are the folks who are your most likely and probably your best bet, or anyone who traveled across the country. So that's how you can kind of pick among the family of who your one swab would be. But if everyone's healthy, everyone's vaccinated, no one has symptoms, and one member of the household tests negative, you feel pretty confident that you're not bringing COVID into that in that meetup.
Thank you, Dr. Berry.
No worry.
I'm wondering if you've had an opportunity to dig into Governor Inslee's response to the federal mandate for workplace vaccination and the testing option.
A little bit. So just to review, this is a federal order requiring weekly testing for unvaccinated staff at any business that has 100 or more employees. This came down from the federal government, and it will be enforced through the Department of Labor and Industries and OSHA. At different states that some states within the country have the ability to either implement it as written or to make it more stringent than was written at the federal level. Governor Inslee has come out to say that he's not planning to make it more stringent, but he will plan to implement it here. There has been some question about some of the court challenges to the federal rule and whether or not that will stop it from being implemented in Washington state. And one of the statements Governor Inslee has made is that if that happens, if it gets stopped at the federal level, it has not yet, but if it does, that he would implement one in Washington state on his own. So that all means that in Washington, we should plan on this rule coming into effect, which means if you work for a business that has 100 or more people, you should go ahead and get vaccinated. It's the right thing to do. It's going to keep your neighbors and family members and coworkers safe. But if you can't or you're choosing not to get vaccinated, then you should plan on getting tested once a week. One of the clarifications that came down from the federal order is that employers are not going to be required to foot the bill for the testing. So it will likely be the employee who chooses not to get vaccinated who will actually end up having to cover the cost of that testing, which could add up over time. Those tests can get expensive after a while. That's what I'm aware of so far. Were there any other provisions that you want to make sure we touched on?
Nope, that's very helpful. Thank you. All right.
And they are, as the person who's looking into their Thanksgiving gathering, they are expensive.
They are.
Yeah. About $50 for two is what I found at the pharmacy.
Okay, they're going up. They used to be 25 for two, but I suspect we're in a supply and demand situation, especially going into Thanksgiving. But yeah, they're expensive. I would say, you know, unless you have a true medical contraindication to getting vaccinated, which are rare, they do exist, but they are rare. It's going to be the best move for yourself, for your health, for the health of your family, for the health of your coworkers to get vaccinated. And I don't think these rules are going away. In fact, I think we're going to see more and more of them. So as you plan for work going forward, I would really encourage folks to get vaccinated. It's going to be really important to getting us out of this. All right, should we move on to KPTZ questions? So one question was, where in Jefferson County can I get a PCR test to go to Canada? And so we do have a list of sites where you can get tested on our website. Many of those are limited to folks who are who are sick or who are close contacts of cases. But there is one place in town that's doing travel testing. And Willie, do you happen to remember the name of them? I can look it up, or we can just send folks to our website.
North Star.
North Star, that's the one. So I would give them a call. They are doing travel testing. You do have to pay out of pocket for that travel testing. There also are pharmacies in Clallam County, relatively nearby, who are doing travel PCRs. So Rite Aid is actually doing travel testing, and I hear that it may be free, which would make it the only place that you can get free travel testing around. And it is a PCR. Olympic Medical Center in Port Angeles is also doing travel testing, but you do have to pay out of pocket for it. So if you're planning to, say, get on the Black Ball Ferry, that can be a good option as you're going through there. It is a challenge. The requirement for fully vaccinated folks to get a PCR test is really limiting for cross-border travel, especially short cross-border travel. I do think it would make a lot of sense for fully vaccinated folks to get an antigen test on the way in, and that's certainly something that's being advocated for at the local and state government level and federal as well. So stay tuned. I think there is a way to do that very safely if you're fully vaccinated. Otherwise, next questions. I have two vaccinated friends whose chiropractor is not vaccinated, does not wear a mask, and makes patient masking optional. I was quite shocked. Isn't this very risky? And is there any action the health department could take? Yes, it is very risky. And there is some that we could take. When it comes to healthcare systems, there are a few different places where we have authority. So if we do get the name of the chiropractor's office, what we would do is, the first thing we would do is just a courtesy call to let them know, hey, we've had a report that sounds concerning, and do that outreach that way. Often we have a lot of success there. If we don't have success there, we can report the facility to their licensing board and to the Department of Labor and Industries for enforcement if they're not following masking rules in a healthcare setting. But we do need to know where it is. And we can do that anonymously. And we don't come down with the hammer first. We first start with just a call to check in with folks, let them know. But it is very dangerous in a healthcare setting to not require masking of patients and certainly of staff. All right. And then we had a complex question from someone who's planning for church services going into the holidays. I will say this individual, if I can get their email from KPTZ, I'll send them a direct response, because there were a lot of questions that might not apply to everyone. But there are some general things that I think folks might want to know as they plan for a holiday season that often involves church services. So as we go in the holiday season, churches tend to be a little more packed. We tend to see a lot more people come indoors. As far as that goes, there are ways to make that safer. I would recommend there be capacity limitations on the church. Depending on the size of your church, your safest is going to be sticking to about a 50% indoor capacity moving into the holidays, and make sure that everyone wears a mask in that setting, regardless of vaccination status. We certainly have seen large-scale church outbreaks, you guys remember. But when we see parishioners and staff all masked, we don't see that level of outbreak. And so wearing masks, keeping some spacing between household groups really goes a really long way. The other question they talked about was about singing. Is it possible to sing safely? Because for many folks, that's a very key part of their worship service, and they'd like to see it come back. And there actually is a way to do it safely, or in a safer way. Certainly, making sure that your entire choir is vaccinated is the most important thing. We have seen that singing is uniquely capable of spreading aerosolized COVID-19 particles in a very wide, in a far and wide way. But if you are fully vaccinated, the probability that you'll get COVID-19 to spread it is much, much lower. There have also been significant tests on these singing masks that have come out that make a good seal on the face, but stand out a little further from your face. And they actually do a really good job of preventing spread of COVID-19. So if you want to bring back a church choir, I think you can do it well, but you got to make sure everybody's vaccinated and that they all wear a singing mask when they sing. But if you do that, you're very unlikely to cause a widespread outbreak related to singing at your church. And I can dig into some more of the details with this particular individual, but I do think this can be done well. We got to get vaccinated. We got a mask. And I think it is reasonable to require vaccination for those kind of high-risk settings where you have someone singing in front of a congregation. And then you can have a service and keep people safe.
Is that it from KPTZ?
That's all I have, only three today.
Okay, great. So welcome, Willie. What do you have for us?
Hey, thank you, Commissioner. So last Saturday, 158 5 to 11-year-olds came through our MassVax clinic in Chimacum. We didn't reach capacity on this one. The initial clinic in Port Townsend filled up almost immediately. And then we weren't actually able to fill this one, surprisingly, but we still appreciate everyone who is able to come out. We had one young individual specifically who came and just couldn't bring themselves to get the shot. They left for a little bit, came back and gave it another go, and managed to get their first dose of vaccine. So a special shout out to that young person. We appreciate their heart and their willingness to face their fears. So we had a couple others who weren't ready at this time to follow through, and that's okay. We hope to see them out again. So a big thank you to all the parents as well. They were partners with us in making this happen. So we were a little bit nervous again, all the kids in one spot, but fortunately it went off relatively smoothly. We'll be back next month for second dose clinics for the kids who got their first shots this month. We'll be in back at Blue Heron in Port Townsend on the 4th. And then due to a scheduling conflict, we'll be in Chimacum on the 18th. So those kids will get their shots 4 weeks out instead of three. No issue there. Health officer and our doctors and public health partners gave that the thumbs up. At the clinic, on the 4th and at the clinic on the 18th, again, those will be for second doses, but we will have first doses available. If you have a 5 to 11-year-old who missed out on this first round, so we will have a small amount, but first doses will be available. So the links to sign up will be available on the public health website later today. They haven't been published yet, but we'll be making that announcement and having those available here shortly. So Port Townsend on the 4th, Chimacum on the 18th, small amount of first doses as well as second doses for the kids who got their first this month. Other than that, as Dr. Berry said, we are hoping to continue to focus on the 5 to 11-year-olds, continue to focus on those folks who are of a little more advanced age or have a medical condition. So we are really unsure of our booster dose schedule beyond the 5 to 11-year-olds come December. We're not quite sure on January. That's a conversation we're going to be having this week and into next. So expect some additional announcements soon. But for the time being, and you can always give us a call here at the call center. Pharmacies are still a little bit booked up, but are able to offer more and more. Tri-Area Pharmacy is taking a much deserved break this week for the Thanksgiving holiday, and they don't have walk-ins available. And then this weekend, again, being Thanksgiving weekend, we're giving the public health and DEM staff and all of our volunteers a much deserved break. So it'll be a quiet week for us. We'll be back in action next month, and we'll have announcements on any other potential opportunities here relatively soon. And other than that, the pharmacies are doing a killer job. We will have volunteers here at the call center Monday through Wednesday, and we'll be back next week. So feel free to give us a ring. Go to the public health website. The Vaccine Finder website also is a really great resource. So in the meantime, we're very much looking forward to hopefully some peace and quiet this weekend. No KPTZ questions for me. So I'll take questions from the commissioners.
All right. Any questions for Willie?
Just thanks for taking care of those kiddos.
No, thank you.
But just add anecdotally that my little people, I always talk about the 10-year-old did get her vaccine, and she was one of those potentially don't want a shot people, and she went to the Tri-Area Pharmacy and they did a great job for her. So kudos to the Tri-Area Pharmacy too for stepping up and filling in the gaps where or more than filling in the gaps.
Yeah. And they've been they've been at this a long time too. They with the help of the Bainbridge Island Medical Reserve Corps, actually, they were up and they were running clinics very early on, and Mark and his team have been incredible. So they continue to be, and I hope they get a little bit of rest this week because they've been phenomenal partners. So huge shout out to them.
Yeah. It does look as though regionally there's a fair amount of availability for boosters at the neighboring counties' pharmacy slots. Can you talk a little bit, Dr. Berry, about the benefit of the mix and match versus getting the same vaccine that you received for your first two doses?
There is some early data suggesting a benefit from mixing your doses. So if you had a Pfizer, getting a Moderna, or if you had a Moderna, getting a Pfizer. It's relatively limited data on the benefits of mixing. And so I wouldn't say it's a strong indication that you have to mix, but it is an option that's available. The only place where we really do see significant improvement is adding an mRNA to a Johnson & Johnson. So if you got a Johnson & Johnson vaccine the first time and you don't have any other contraindication to the mRNA vaccine, we would recommend you get a Pfizer or Moderna for your second shot. That really does provide you better benefit. As far as Pfizer versus Moderna, a lot more mixed there. But we do recommend getting that booster, certainly if you're in one of those high-risk groups. And if you have access to a booster, if you're not in a high-risk group, that can be a good option as well. But it's very safe to mix, likely a little bit of benefit from mixing, but not a strong indication. So what I would say is if you got an mRNA and you find a pharmacy that has a booster, either of Pfizer or Moderna, take it. If you got a Johnson & Johnson and you are open to getting an mRNA vaccine for your booster, I would encourage that.
Great. Okay. Anything else for Dr. Berry or Willie? Okay, well, thank you both very much. I hope you have a lovely holiday weekend. Thank you, very grateful for all of your hard work this year and every year. And we are off next Monday. We do not have a meeting on Monday the 29th. So maybe you'll even get to squeeze in another little partial day off. I don't know.
That's exciting.
You deserve it, certainly.
Thank you, have a lovely holiday, guys.
Hey, thank you all.
Take care.
This is KPTZ Port Townsend. We've just heard the weekly public health updates on COVID-19 live from the Jefferson County Board of Commissioners meeting. A recording of today's reports will be available later today for streaming online at kptz.org. Thank you for listening and for supporting your local community radio station. To make a donation to KPTZ, please visit kptz.org.